Dr. Leah has had her son, and we are so excited to welcome baby Cade to the world in this episode, detailing his birth story. Leah takes us on all of the twists and turns of the long, unexpected path of getting him Earthside, starting with the home birth plan and natural induction methods, to then reaching 42 weeks and pivoting to the hospital in order to get him here. Sometimes birth is a mystery where we never really get clear answers. We honor and respect what babies communicate to us, and in this case, it seemed clear that despite best efforts, his plan was different from hers, and she embraced it with grace. Congratulations again to the Gordon family. Now let's give it a listen.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
The metabolic needs of pregnancy, postpartum healing, and making breast milk require more minerals than in other times of your life. And staying truly deeply hydrated during these times is very important. Nowadays, there are more options for this than ever, and ingredient quality manufacturing integrity is very important for Dr. Leah and I. That's why we love Redmond Relight electrolyte powders. Mined in the USA, Relight contains Redmond's ancient unrefined sea salt with 60 plus trace minerals in addition to the appropriate proportions and forms of calcium, potassium, chloride, and magnesium that pregnant and breastfeeding moms need. Pregnancy demands a huge increase in blood volume and synthesis of an entire new baby, and that requires, you guessed it, minerals. This is the perfect blend to be sipping on during your labor or to have mixed into your bedside water bottle during breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, strawberry lemonade, or lemon lime. Grab a sample pack option to try them yourself and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off your order of any of the products that Redmond has to offer, including their OG sea salt, other seasoning salts, natural toothpaste, bentonite clays, and more. Happy hydrating! Okay, Dr. Leah, you have a son. And I'm so excited that he's here finally. Oh my goodness. Obviously, so are you. And you are going to share with us all today your birth story. And he's only, what, six days old?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, less than a week old right now. So this is great because it might seem kind of crazy to do it so fast. But as you know, and other people may relate, it's really difficult to remember all the details. And so I applaud you for sort of like making the time to prioritize this because it'll be the freshest story now for you in the future and for him to hear his own birth story later on. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
let's just kind of dive right in. Let's hear it.
Yeah. And I'm nursing him right now. So if you hear little baby gulps, that's what's happening. His little voice is so sweet. Yeah. So the birth did not go as I planned or dreamed or wanted. But he's here and that's all that matters. And I will share all the details. So basically, I went late with my daughter. She was 2 weeks late. And because I wanted to have a home birth with her and I wanted to have a home birth with him, you know, there is a law in California and Idaho that doesn't allow you to have a home birth after 42 weeks. And so with her, I really assumed she would come and then she didn't. And then it was starting to get like a lot of pressure and it was during COVID. So there was a lot of stress because I did a lot of reflection in preparation for this birth on her birth. And I was like, it was just COVID and I was so stressed and there was so much pressure. And that's why I never went into labor. And so I was like, it's going to be so different this time because I'm super calm. We're in Idaho. I don't feel that pressure. I actually felt like he was going to come early. I was worried about him coming too early. And so I really didn't think that we would get to where we did. But basically, my due date came. So I was worried in October that he would come too close to my daughter's birthday. And then it was Halloween. And I was like, okay, just get through Halloween. I don't want to have a Halloween baby. And then it was November and the days kept going and they kept passing. And, you know, I just kept waking up pregnant. I had no Braxton Hicks. I had no signs of anything. And I just kept, you know, doing my thing. I decorated for Christmas. I was preparing. I had a whole list of things that we wanted to get done before the baby came. I got all of those things done. So I was like, I'm energetically ready for this baby. We're physically ready for him. And it's just such a weird place to be waiting, because every day it could be like the day that you meet your baby and you wake up, and every night I'm like, tonight's the night the contractions are going to start. And they just kept not happening. So my due date came, and I know that it's very common for people to go past their due date. So I was just like, okay, that's okay. You know, it's going to be fine. And I unfortunately had a lot of body pain this pregnancy. I had left sciatic pain and like right anterior front leg tendonitis type pain, which in hindsight and what some of the practitioners told me, I think was because he wasn't in the best position. So my pelvis was kind of twisting and torquing, and it was affecting me on the right side and then on the left, but like in opposite ways. So it made doing lots and lots of walking challenging, which again, it's like we always want an answer for everything of why things went a certain way. I definitely wasn't very active this pregnancy, from my nausea to feeling super sick and having pelvic floor dysfunction from hurting myself floating down the river. There were a couple months where I couldn't even walk, you know, 10 feet because my pelvic floor felt like I was going to just like separate and my whole like insides were going to fall out. Not like a prolapse, but like I was ripped apart like a Barbie doll.
Because you were. Really quick, yeah, story.
I literally was. The river literally ripped my legs apart.
Yeah, so Leah was floating and had 1 foot in the tube, 1 foot in the river. It's not like it was very deep, but it's
but it was powerful. Very strong.
Yeah, it's powerful and strong.
Right around a curve. And so I really messed up my pelvic floor, and I was going to pelvic PT like every week for like 6 or 8 weeks to try to help that. So I definitely wasn't like super active, exercising every single day, walking a ton, which could have been, you know, another factor in all of this. Who knows? But basically, my due date came, and I just didn't want to induce even naturally. I was trying so hard to just trust him and trust the process and, you know, honor his everything. It was so funny because when I found out initially when I got pregnant that I would have a Scorpio baby, which is such a silly thing to think about, I was just like a little worried. My husband and I were, I mean, emotionally sensitive people for sure. But I was just like, okay, it's going to be very interesting having like a super deep emotional son, you know, it'll come within its own like things. And it's like, we're ready for it. I'm going to be fine. And, it was so funny as we were nearing, I remember that transition. We had a girls' night, you and me and a bunch of ladies here. And someone made a joke that they're like, maybe he's waiting to be a Sagittarius. And I was just like, no way. That's so far away. Like, there's no way he's going to wait that long.
No, I had the exact – I just have to say really fast. I had the exact same thing with Sunday, because she was supposed to be a Libra, like me and Sloan. And – somebody made the same kind of a comment. They were like, oh, well, what if, you know, she doesn't come until, and then she's a Scorpio. And I was like, oh, I hadn't even thought of that. And I know, like, whatever. Astrology is just one thing, but it is kind of fun and it's cool. And we've always sort of been interested in it. And it's just like in a casual way, not like, oh my God, we have to make all of our life decisions based on the stars. But it is kind of like a fun thing to talk about and know about. And I had not even fathomed or considered the fact that that could happen. And sure enough, it did. And she's a Scorpio.
I know, which I know, you know, when you get into deep astrology, it's not just your sun sign that affects your personality. There's like so much more than that. But I just thought it was really funny because
it felt so far away. I thought, no way. There's no freaking way that could happen.
I know. I was like, no way. And as we got closer and closer, I'm like, this is hilarious. Like, I think, you know, he's not even going to be a Scorpio. We've made it through the whole Scorpio season. I thought he was going to come even before Scorpio season started, which is like a month earlier. Because I remember thinking like, oh my gosh, we're going into Scorpio season. And then we came out of it. And I was like, what is going on? So I remember like that cusp, I was looking at it. I was like, well, maybe he'll be like a Scorpio Sagittarius cusp. And I was reading about them. I was like, yes, totally. Like, it's he's going to come tonight. This totally sounds like him. And then he didn't. And then more days went by. And I was just like, oh my goodness. Because I think that was around when I turned 41-ish weeks when that.
Okay, well, yeah. And I have the timeline here. So I just want to mention that around 40.5, so 40 weeks and 5 days, or sorry, 40 and a half weeks-ish.
Yeah.
When you would walk, you would start to have like a little bit of cramping. Like when we would just go out together. And it never really stuck around, but you started to lose your mucus plug then too.
Yes, you're right. I did. And that got, I was really excited about that because I was like, something's happening. And I was losing a lot of mucus. I felt like I was like, stuff is going on.
For like a week.
Yes, for a week. And it's just so funny because when you hear about other people's birth stories, everyone will be like, oh, I, like you even told me, you're like, I went into labor the night I lost my mucus plug.
I did. I'm sorry.
And some people go weeks without going into labor. And so it's such a mind trip because you just can't base it off of other people's experiences because they're all just so different. And you want to hold on to those things to be like, oh, it happened to this person, so it can happen to me. And I have similar experiences along the infertility journey of, you know, this person went on vacation and got pregnant, so I go on vacation, then I'll get pregnant, you know, and it's just like, no, it doesn't work like that. So I started losing mucus plug. I would get crampy when I would walk. I didn't feel like Braxton Hicks's that much. It felt like period cramps.
Which was great.
Yeah, which was great. And I have such a hard time understanding if a contraction is
Yeah, you sure do. Okay, I just have to say for everybody listening, I have never in my life met somebody so unable to describe what they're feeling.
Well, and it's like I'm very in tune with my body. Maybe I don't actually have contractions. Maybe like when my body doesn't go into labor or something, except I do. I did have them with Avia, but I like blacked out during that labor. I don't remember what it felt like.
Yeah.
I watch videos of myself moaning and stuff, but I'm like, I could not tell you one iota what I was feeling in that moment. I can't remember.
Which is kind of crazy because you feel every little thing in your body.
I feel every little thing and I'm very, very body aware. And so it's very strange, but maybe I don't have normal ones. I don't know. I'm just like, it's not what people describe. Like you're like, it creeps in from the side, like fingers or whatever. And I'm like, I don't feel that at all. So who knows? But I was feeling cramping mostly when I would walk, but then it would trigger my sciatica when I would walk. So it just felt really cruel because I'm like, I know that the more I walk, the better. But then I like literally couldn't walk and I would be – I had the little – it's like a Theragun, but ours called the Hypervol. I mean, I had that on my left glute like almost 24/7 because I was in so much pain trying to relieve it. And I was getting tons of massages. I was getting a massage almost every week. Going to chiropractic a ton, doing all sorts of things, trying to help, you know, get this baby out. And so, yeah, I started losing mucus plug and then I just kept waiting. I still wasn't doing any like natural induction as far as herbs or homeopathy or anything at that point, because with my daughter, we did do that. We were starting to panic at the end and we were throwing everything at it. And I had this thought, I'm like, well, maybe that's why I vomited the whole time during her labor. I was so afraid for that to happen, to just be so sick, because the big reason why I went to the hospital with her was after 32 hours laboring at home, I was so depleted because I threw up the whole time. And I just really didn't want that to happen. And so I was holding off on induction. But then, you know, it's just, it's a lot like my infertility journey, but in a shorter time period of disappointment and pivoting and, you know, crying and processing and acceptance and like all of these things happening on like a accelerated timeline. You know, with fertility, it's months go by because you have to wait a whole month to see if you're pregnant and then another month and then another month. This is like every day. It's like I'm not in labor. So it's like an accelerated version of that, you know, disappointment and anticipation and, you know, being let down and having to like pivot and do things you didn't plan on doing or want to do. So I remember my midwife came and she was talking about the plan just in case we were going to start inducing naturally. And she, you know, brought me the ingredients for a castor oil drink. And I was like, surely I'm not going to need that. You know, that's crazy. She gave me some cottonwood tincture. So I started
cotton root
tincture, not cottonwood, not like the bunnies. it's like in my mind. And I think I started that on that Wednesday. So that would have been like 41
and
2 or something.
Yeah, 41 and 2. One. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I started that and was just like, okay, like, you know, thinking it every time. So the thing I'm doing is going to induce it. Nothing really happened. And so Friday rolled around. So I would be 41 and 4. And I was like, okay, I'm going to take the drink because nothing's happening. So I made the casserole cocktail, which I looked up the dose because everyone was telling me different things. And, you know, one of my friends was like, I took a quarter cup and I was like vomiting and diarrhea everywhere. I felt absolutely terrible. Like all these things. I'm like, wow, a quarter cup sounds so much. And so I looked up like what exactly was like the studied amount. And it is a quarter cup, which is 4 tablespoons. But it's handled better when you have a nut butter and all these other things. So the drink they gave me, actually, I didn't mind it. After drinking it the second time, which I'll get to, the thought of like drinking that again would make me want to vomit. But the first time it was fine and it was just half the dose. So my midwives gave me 2 tablespoons of castor oil with 2 tablespoons of peanut butter and then this like papaya juice and water and a little bit of blue vervain tincture. So I drank that all down and was like, okay, here we go. Because everyone's like, as soon as you take castor oil, your baby's like coming, you know? And
especially like when you're really, really, really ripe and ready for labor. And that is really the only situation where castor oil does have positives. There are negatives that happen with it too, just for everybody listening. Like you don't want to just take it willy-nilly. You definitely want to be under the guidance of professionals who are experienced with it to watch for the warning signs because it can make babies poop in labor and then they have meconium in the water. They can aspirate that meconium. There are downsides to this. Also, you could take castor oil all you wanted at like 37 weeks. It's not going to make you go into labor. If you have a cervix that's starting to do things, which we knew was happening. You hadn't had a cervical check, but we knew because you were losing mucus plug, you were losing a lot of mucus. Remember that was, there was a one morning where you woke up and it was like really thin. You had to wear like a pad all day. You thought like maybe it was even your water breaking, all of these things. You were having cramps. There was all this stuff that we were like, hey, like you're right there. Like you're so close. No. And we're in this 41st week. So it's like kind of go time. We need to like help push and move the meter a little bit. So that's why it felt like this is a good idea. And then because your body is sensitive too, we were like, let's just do the half dose, right? So I just wanted to give some context to that. And then you had a massage scheduled that day.
Yeah, I had a massage and like I was just so confident that the baby was going to come. I know you had told me a couple stories of friends that took castor oil and they went into labor like within hours, you know? I mean, I didn't even have Mike go to the store without me because I'm like, this baby might come while you're at the grocery store. And so I started feeling cramping about 3 hours after I took it. And I was like, yes, like things are happening. And so I was in the parking lot of the grocery store because Avi had fallen asleep in the car and Mike was in getting groceries thinking like, this is our last time to get food before this baby comes. And I was having really significant period cramps. I was like, oh my gosh, this baby is coming like any minute. I was like actually worried. I didn't have my phone on me. And so I was like, I can't even call Mike. And he's like rushing in the grocery store trying to get the groceries. And he told me, the guy at the checkout's like, do you have any fun plans for the day? And he's like, actually, my wife is in labor in the car. It was so funny. I wasn't. It was like totally not happening. But it did do something because we'll get to that. But I did that and I went to bed that night thinking, okay, this is it. I'm going to wake up, you know, in cramps and the baby's going to come and then nothing. And that was really sad that it just kind of slowed down. And it was so reminiscent of my daughter's birth where I would go into labor and I'd have really hard contractions and then they would stop. And so on Saturday, we had 2 days left before I legally had to be in the hospital. And everyone on Instagram, you know, it's like everyone's story is so sweet. They're like, my baby came at 41 and 5, 41 and 6, like hang in there, he's coming. You know, there were all of these stories of people going into labor right at the very end. And at this point I was like, okay, this start and stop pattern is probably because he's in a bad position, which is what we thought was going on with my daughter. So you came over and we did a bunch of positional things. We were following Ann Gilligan's guide. So I was like, got in the bathtub. You were helping me. I did this like hip sway thing to try to stretch out the anterior ligaments, the round ligaments and stuff. I'm assuming that's what that was doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have an episode with Ann Gilligan too, that we'll link along with your first birth story episode too. Mm-hmm. And It's much more of a specific plan for rotating a baby that is either on the right side or is posterior. And Cade was on the right side a lot, which there's mm-hmm. so many little details and nuances. So I'm not going to give too much information about it right here because I don't want there to, there's not like these hard and fast rules, especially as a second time mom. Your baby can be on the right for, it's okay. Until labor is started, we would like them to be then now getting onto the left, LOA, left occiput anterior. And because you were having those contractions and we were so at the end, we were using the guide in that kind of a way. And I was using, I was like on the phone with Anne too. She's amazing. Mm-hmm. And we'll put all of her information here so you guys can check that out. You birth workers should definitely know about this because it's so cool. It's like a much, much, much more specific like spinning babies type thing. It's a little flow that you do of four positional things to make sure the baby is in the right position. And it was like, it was working for sure. I mean, he was changing, but then he kind of seemed to like flip back by the end of that day. But we were just making sure that there was like room in your pelvis. We were like having you move. We did the side lying release even before we did the guide, which contains that too. We did like stairs. You were doing all of the things. It was like squats and dancing and, you were doing all of it.
I know. I was doing all of it. And that day, that Saturday, so 41 and 5, I started homeopathy. So we were doing – I did pulsatilla, and then we alternated semisuffusia and colophyllum every 15 minutes for 2 hours, which it's so funny. You know, it's like I had a friend here who was in labor at similar – time and they're like, we're gonna have to go to the hospital. We really don't want to be induced. Like, do you know of anything? I'm like, have you tried homeopathy? And they're like, no. And so I told him about the remedies literally after like the first dose, she goes into labor and has her baby. You know, and I'm just like, why does this not happen for me? So I was taking the homeopathic remedies. I was still doing the cotton root tincture. And we did all those positional things. You told me to dance. I mean, I was orgasming. We were doing nipple stimulation. I started the pump, which the pump, everyone's like, don't use a pump. It doesn't do anything. It's just so funny. The pump was the thing that got my contractions going the most. I felt the most after the breast pump, even more than like, you know, Mike stimulating my nipples and stuff, which is so funny, probably because the pressure was so intense and very painful. And I'm like, this sucks, but I want this baby out. So I was doing all of that and, you know, curb walking. I would go on walks and do curb walking. I have a list here of this like post that I made on Instagram of all the things that I did. Yeah, I had gotten acupuncture from my friend Kirsten. Shout out to her. She was awesome with the stem. So she did acupuncture with stem, like stimulation to make it even more intense. I was napping. I was crying. I was meditating. I was like going on dates. Oh yeah, Mike and I went on this like amazing date a week before my due date thinking like this is the last meal we're going to have together. But it was so fun. And I am really grateful for all of those times that we had. But I was just doing all the things, you know. And so Saturday, I was like, okay, is he going to be in a better position? And, you know, I woke up on Sunday, still no contractions, still pregnant. So I was like, okay, I'm going to be drinking the second dose of castor oil. And the plan with the midwife is like, typically you just need that half dose. That will get it going. If not, you do another half dose. And I asked my midwives, should I just do like the full dose that is in the studies, what is effective, which is that quarter cup, 4 tablespoons. They're like, sure. Like it's up to you. If there's anything that you're going to regret being like, oh, if only I had done that thing, you know, do it. So I choked down 4 more tablespoons of castor oil. I doubled the peanut butter. So it's 4 tablespoons of peanut butter. That was maybe like the hard part because when I think about the drink, I'm like, I probably should have used a nut butter that I would never want to eat again because it's like so gross. That one was a lot harder to get down. But I never had any diarrhea. I never had any vomiting. I was nauseous from that one. I was like, whoa. But drinking 4 tablespoons of peanut butter and 4 tablespoons of castor oil, no matter what kind of oil, that's like 8 tablespoons of fat. Like gross, you know, I mean, it's in a huge jug too with like papaya juice and all that. And so, you know, how does that not make you nauseous? But I never had a GI stimulation.
Which is crazy. That is so crazy. Because you are so sensitive.
I'm so sensitive. Like I'm literally so sensitive. I could eat a piece of candy and know that it has high fructose corn syrup in it because I get bloated from the corn syrup. I mean, I'm so sensitive. Like the weirdest thing. This is why I'm just like, maybe I don't have normal receptors to initiate labor, or that I have something wrong with my oxytocin receptor or something. So basically, I took that castor oil. It was really hard to choke down. And I had thought, because I started getting nauseous, and I was like, do I need to drink all of this? But I'm like, if I don't get it all down, I will always wonder if that extra little bit will have done anything. So I choked it down, and that was tough. Our good friend Ryan Gasse from Tune Chiropractic came and gave me an adjustment, because I was like, maybe I need to be adjusted, and his position is, you know, needed a little extra help. And then I did start having contractions from that castor oil, similar to what I had on Friday. And I was like, surely with all these positional things, all the homeopathy, 2 rounds of castor oil, nipple stimulation, you know, sex, you know, all the things, surely it's tonight. And Ryan told me, he's like, our assistant went into labor the night before she had to be induced. You know, I'm like, this is it. He's waiting till the very end to teach me something. But he's going to come, you know, right at the very end, right before, and I can still have my beautiful, peaceful home birth that I dreamed of and imagined. Because if you end up having 2 C-sections, you can never have a home birth again. So it was just like, I really wanted that for if I have future kids. And I was like, this is it. It's going to be tonight. So I went to bed just like very prepared. And we had sent my sister, or my daughter, Avia, with
this is a big part of this.
On Friday. So when I took the castor oil the first time at 41 and 4, and I started having contractions, I was like, this baby's coming. I texted my family. I was like, there might be a baby tonight. And Avia went with my sister to stay the night on Friday. And here we are now going into Sunday night, and she still has been at my sister's, because I'm like, this baby is coming any minute. Right. So it's Sunday night, and I go to bed. And I remember waking up in the middle of the night to pee, and my contractions had stopped. And I'm like, oh my God, you've got to be kidding me. I was crying so hard on Sunday. I was just so sad, even though Mike's like, don't give up. Like, we still have a night, you know? And I'm like, I just think I knew intuitively, because I was processing as if it had, like, we'd run out of time. I'm just like, I just don't see how this is going to happen, you know? But then there was a part of me in the back of my mind that I'm like, but maybe if I accept that it's not going to happen, then it will happen. You know?
Right.
So exactly. Like, as soon as I, like, you know, cried and released and like accepted the fact that this was happening, then the baby came. I've heard all those stories. Not that I was crying to try to manipulate it. I was really upset. I really was like, I can't believe that this is happening. Like, this is so unfair. I don't understand. Like, why can I not have my babies? And, you know, I have this mentality that isn't super healthy, but it's really hard to not internalize it, because I've always had issues in the female reproductive space for whatever reason, like, you know, painful intercourse, painful periods before I got pregnant with my daughter. We had to go through infertility. Granted, it wasn't necessarily my primary issue, but I did have polyps. You know, I had to go under anesthesia twice to remove uterine polyps. We tried to get pregnant for over 6 years. I had to do IVF. My body's been through so much in that regard. You know, between painful intercourse for almost like 17 years and IVF and all of that. And my pregnancies are so hard. I'm so sick. I'm so nauseous, vomiting the whole time. My birth with my daughter was so hard, you know, not at all how I imagined having a C-section, all of that. I was just hoping so badly that I would get like one normal experience of, you know, what women get to experience. And like, that was like what I was mourning more than anything. You know, obviously I wanted my son to be safe, like whatever that meant. There were no signs that he was unsafe, that we kept going. You know, he was moving a ton. Everything seemed fine. His heart rate was always great. And so there wasn't anything that was like, you must go to the hospital right now. Obviously, if that were the case, I would have weeks before. You know, it's not like I was so anti the hospital. I just really wanted to have a normal experience of like normal physiology in my body. So I cried a lot, you know, like it makes me want to cry even now, like seeing like the birth tub and my room and just being like, I don't know if I'll ever get to experience that, you know? So that was really, really hard. I cried so much. I mean, I had been crying a lot like the last few days before, but Sunday was really, really hard. And then I woke up on Monday and the contractions had completely stopped. And I was really sad. I cried a ton that morning because I was like, oh my God, we have to go to the hospital, you know? And I was still hoping to have a vaginal birth. I was still hoping to have a VBAC, even though it would be in the hospital setting. But I know how things go, you know, when you're there. But I was still holding out hope that it would be fine. And so I had done so much crying that by the time I met up with you and Jamie, my midwife, we went to the hospital. And I'm so grateful for my midwives, Pangea Midwifery, because they were also holding out hope for me that it would all work out at home. But just in case, they had started communication with a midwife at the hospital. Just in case I needed to transfer, we would have been in communication with her. And it just worked out so divinely that on Monday, the day that I had to go, the one amazing midwife that they work with, who used to be a home birth midwife, who's now works in the hospital, was there on call. And she's not there very often and had been communicating with them. And so they were willing to take me without having to go through triage and without having to do anything else. I didn't have to have established care with them ahead of time, which is really rare for them to do that. And so we went to the hospital around 11. You and my midwife and Mike met me there. And at that point, I was like in good spirits because I had cried so much. I was like, I really don't think I can cry anymore. And I was just like, this is going to be good. Like, I'm determined to have an empowered birth, like, no matter where it is. And so we were waiting to get into our room. And I had a friend who reached out to a friend. I have a friend of a friend whose cousin was a nurse there, and she met us. It was like so sweet.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Did you know that 97% of women in the US take a prenatal supplement, yet 95% plus are still deficient in key nutrients? My favorite prenatal is from a company called Needed because they dose nutrients at levels to not just meet the bare minimum as most prenatals do. They actually use form of nutrients and dosages that allow mama and baby to thrive. Needed actually approached me years ago and asked me if I could help them design the perfect prenatal because they knew that the current prenatals available were not actually helping women. We spent over 3 years diving into the research and understanding what practitioners are seeing and what women actually need at this important season before we formulated this amazingly supportive option. It's no wonder over 4,000 practitioners now recommend Needed, something I am very proud of. If you have followed me for a while, you know that prenatals and optimizing nutrients starts long before pregnancy, so no matter where you are along your fertility or motherhood journey, Needed is the brand I recommend. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% on your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, back to the show.
So they admitted me back into the room and the birth like wing was very nice. You know, the room was nice and big. They did have a tub there and I was like, okay, this is going to be great. You know, we're going to do this. And so we met with the nurses, they took my blood, did all the things. And then we met the midwife and she was great. Mike said she was Morgan McDermott at 65.
Oh my God. That's a huge compliment. Cause I was like, you are amazing. She's so cool and so awesome. And yeah, like very spindly. I feel like I could imagine myself looking a lot like that when I'm older.
Yeah. It was really funny. It was very odd for me to see someone like her in a hospital setting. Cause she did still have that very like hippie, like home birthy type of vibe, which was really perfect for me. And the nurses were all so great. So it immediately calmed me down. I was doing like meditations before I went to the hospital. Then I'm like, I'm safe. This is a safe place. Like, because when I went to the hospital with Avia, it did not feel that way. It was in the middle of COVID. And I was like, are they going to take my baby? Like, what is going to happen? I had never been in the hospital. I'd never met the doctors. Like, I had heard horror stories from patients, you know, in different parts of the country. And
they had wanted you to like wear a mask, and like Mike and I had to get COVID tested or like show a negative test. Like the whole thing was just so much rigmarole. They almost didn't even let me in because it was like one support person at that point during Avia's birth. And this time was like, I know you weren't in labor, but do you remember, I don't know if you remember this, how many hours went by before they even started with the induction? They were just like, so it took so long. They were just like, so calm about everything. And I think like me and you and Mike were expecting to like get in and then like immediately start things. And literally, I think nothing happened for like 3 hours. They just like slowly took your blood pressure, slowly talked to you about everything. And I mean, it was nice because it wasn't rushed, but it was also like,
I know. I'm like, come on, this is going. I'm here in the middle of the day. It's 11. Let me start laboring or something.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, we did all of that. And then she checked me. This midwife did a cervical check, which my midwife had done a cervical check and tried to strip my membranes on Friday or Saturday. But she said my cervix was super posterior, so that she could hardly even reach it. And she said it was very squishy. So she's like, things have been happening. You feel like very effaced, but I can't tell how dilated you are. And it's just so posterior. And
like his head was in front of that. So like what that means is like his head was low. It wasn't engaged, but it was like in front of the cervix. And that is a normal positional thing that happens. And then as labor contractions begin, or as it's becoming primed and prepped, the cervix sort of like moves more anterior, more forward. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that it was back there was odd. We like all were kind of confused because you'd been having contractions, you'd been having mucus plug loss. Like we knew that it was changing. And then when she got back there and could feel that it was like gelatin-esque type feeling, it was extremely soft and ripe and definitely effacing and almost all the way effaced. It just, she couldn't quite reach it to do a strip, you know, which can help with releasing prostaglandins. I'm just like saying that, not for you, obviously you all know all this, but for the listeners, when you do a membrane strip, it can release the prostaglandins, which can help with the contractions. And again, at this point, it's like we're in go time. So although that was maybe something that we don't know, we kind of theorize that may have been like maybe worked against you with Avia's birth, it was still like, I understand why we made that choice at that time. It was as if it was happening to me too.
It was us. We were both born the baby. Let's be honest.
Sister wise. So, what if I'm like right behind, I'm like behind you?
Like instead of Handmaid's Tale, it's so terrible. Oh my God.
But anyway, it was just fascinating because she couldn't even reach over his head because his head was so low, but then it wasn't engaged. It was like a negative one. So for people who know baby station, it was zero is engaged and then it goes like plus one, plus two, plus three is like crowning. So he was like a negative one. He was a little bit high still and he was moving around, but like she just couldn't quite get all the way to it. And I think like maybe a day went by and then she had done another cervical exam and it was the same sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
On that, like, that maybe the day of the hospital visit or whatever. Either way, but then, now, okay, so you were starting to tell about the midwife doing
that. So the midwife was like, okay, I'm going to do a check on you. And I was like, okay. And, you know, I've had painful intercourse for years. I had sexual trauma, painful intercourse. I'm not a stranger to pain, especially in that area. but she like really got up in there. I mean, I don't know what she was doing. I mean, it was insane. She was like sweeping her hand in like the most intense way. I felt like she was up in my uterus. I don't even know.
It was fascinating.
You were so great. Like, I mean, I was getting so hot and like sweaty from like the pain of it. And I remember, you know, when she actually went into my cervix and I was just like, oh my gosh, she was just really getting at it. I mean, she got up on the table and was like, I mean, I don't even know because I feel like I was closing my eyes. You can describe what she was doing.
It was fascinating. And I don't want this to sound like it was like a crazy obstetrical violence kind of thing.
No.
It wasn't at all. She was so beautiful and gentle about it.
It was great. And I was like, do what you need to do. Like, get this baby going.
Totally. And she was like giving lots of consent and she's like, okay, now you're going to feel my touch on like on your left inner hip. Now you're going to move your leg like this. Now you're going to feel my, okay, is it okay
she's
if I touch
here? Move my legs and do all sorts of stuff.
She could, and when she came out, well, okay, first of all, she was in there for like 5 full minutes, it felt like, maybe even longer. And not until the very end, then she was like, okay, now you're going to feel me touch your cervix. And I was like, wait a minute, what have you been doing this whole time? And it was fascinating because she was like, so she pulls out when she comes out and her hand has like all this bloody show, which is good. It's like bloody mucus, which is what we want to see.
I hadn't had any before that.
Yes, like, you had, just only
all of that.
Right, you had just had regular mucus plug, but no blood, and we were kind of waiting for this bloody show just because it sort of preempts the labor and it means that you're dilating and all these different things. And so she comes out and she's like, "Okay, so see, there's the bloody show that we were looking for." And I was like, "What did you just do in there?" And she said that she, yeah, so she was a home birth midwife in Canada prior to coming to the States, and then now works in the NAMPA St. Luke's, and also this other clinic that's like, I think it's called Grace. What's it called?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Grace. Okay. Grace and, but anyway, she was like, "I learned this from a like physiotherapist," and she was assessing all of your ligaments of your pelvic bowl and all your pelvic floor, which I thought was so smart and so brilliant, especially for you because of the mm-hmm. like kind of torquing of your pelvis, that like back left side, front right side presentation. And we were doing all these things to help balance your pelvic bowl. You'd had chiropractic the prior morning and he really helped as well balance your pelvic bowl. But I thought it was so brilliant and smart of her to like make sure that there was no additional tensions or something that was preventing him from being able to drop into the pelvis, because despite all of the things we did, and I also want to note too, you had even fewer contractions with that double dose of castor oil than you did the first time. And yeah. That was, I mean, all of this stuff, like none of it made sense. None of it made any freaking sense. It was so frustrating. I know it was so frustrating for you too. But for mm-hmm. me, I was like, I almost wouldn't even believe it if I had heard this story, if I hadn't been there firsthand, because it was just like, surely this is going to happen. But anyway, with Kathy, with the midwife, she had just this like very beautiful assessment of everything. And at that point you were 3 centimeters and she was like, okay. And even I will say too, prior to doing the check, she sat on like the bed and talked to you and mm-hmm. Mike for, I don't know, 35 minutes about vulnerability, about freaky mm-hmm. cesarean. I mean, about the mm-hmm. the wisdom of babies, about listening to babies and what do they want? What do they need? And about VBAC and about, and then, you know, she like mentioned some of the things that, but she was like, "We're not even going to talk about rupture. We're not talking about these things. Like this isn't," it was very amazing to watch. It was beautiful. It was slow. It was really good informed consent, shared decision-making. She had this like gorgeous, you know, way of thinking about birth and the mysteries of all of these things and how she was like, we're going to have to like kind of walk this path together and we'll make the pivots together. And I just thought it was so cool.
Yeah. No, she was awesome.
She was so supportive.
I felt so like in such good hands, which made being in the hospital so much better because I've interacted with doctors in other capacities where if that was the doctor that I had, it would have been a very different experience. And so I'm so grateful. And she did talk about that like, you know, she's had C-sections herself, which is what made her go into the hospital and is really passionate about doing C-sections better and differently. And all of this stuff, because she's like, sometimes the babies just want to come in a different way. And so we talked about the potential for that. And, you know, I had already processed so much at that point that I knew that that was a possibility, but I still wanted to try for a VBAC. You know, I was like, let's ask the baby, let's ask my body, you know, if we induce and things are going well and everything's, you know, chugging along, let's try for this vaginal birth. Like that's what I want. And at the end of the day, I've been here before. And if the baby doesn't want to come that way and it's the safest for us to do it in another way, then I'm okay with that. So it felt really good. You know, she talked me through all of that and I felt like we were in a really good place. She thought I would be able to have this baby vaginally based on her assessment at that point. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, let's go. But I still wasn't in labor. So they had to induce me.
And they couldn't do a Foley bowl because you were already 3 centimeters, 90% effaced. Yeah. Like she was so pleased with what she's like, your cervix is gelatin. Like it is mm-hmm. so ready to go. You know, we were like, woohoo. And I feel like the energy really changed and shifted. We were all like, okay, like let's
go. I'm going to have a baby and get like, you know, it's like get your hopes up every time. It's like this baby's coming the next few hours. Cause my initial plan is to do a Foley, but then they're like, we're just going to start you on Pitocin because I mean, that's like the only other next option. And, you know, a little bit of me was like nervous because when I went in with my daughter, I had already been in labor for 32 hours having real labor contractions. And I was so exhausted from vomiting and everything that when I got to the hospital, they just gave me an epidural because they thought that if I had an epidural that I would relax and have the baby and blah, blah, blah. And it never happened. So when they gave me Pitocin with her, I was on an epidural. I had never felt Pitocin contractions.
Yes.
So with them, I was like, okay, like, you know, you hear all these like horror stories about Pitocin and not having pain management. But I was like, I want to try, you know, I want to try to be able to like move around and get him in a good position. I knew that a lot of our issue was positional. So I didn't want to just get an epidural. So they started me on Pitocin and I knew that I had that as an option if I needed it, if it got to, you know, an 8 to 10 out of 10 pain, that I could use that if I needed it. So we started me on Pitocin and I definitely started feeling contractions.
And this was at like 2 p.m. ish.
Yeah, around 2 p.m. And, you know, I would just kind of like feel them and they would come and go. It wasn't super like regular patterned initially. And I know you hated that I was watching the screen, but I would watch the screen because it would help me. It was like biofeedback to help me identify what I was feeling in my body with what I was seeing on the screen to be like, okay, yeah, that's a contraction. I can feel that. And I can see it, you know, rising on the little screen. And so they started me low. And then every 30 minutes or so, they would come in and bump it up because they wanted it to be, you know, a contraction every 2 minutes or so. And so they just kept bumping it up. And it was getting more intense for sure. They typically only let VBAC moms go up to 20, Pitocin at like a level of 20, unless it's like an extreme situation where the doctor's okay with it or whatever. And so it was probably around when the Pitocin was like 10 that I was like, okay, like, you know, I kind of had to breathe through the contractions and I was kind of moaning and stuff. And they just kept cranking it up and hours were going by and I was just laboring and it was definitely painful and intense, but I could handle it. So I was like, I don't need an epidural yet. And I was like, surely things are happening. I mean, I was like, there's no way. I'm like laboring, you know, pretty hard. I'm having pretty intense contractions. I was already 3 centimeters. The nurses checked me and the one nurse was like, you're definitely at 4. And I was like, yay, like things are happening. And so we just kept laboring. They kept turning it up. I was at 16. The Pitocin was at 16 for a couple hours. And I was laboring and the nurse checked me again. And they're like, I think you're still at 4. And I was just like, oh, that's really sad. I know that people can go, you know, everyone tells you all the stories. They're like, well, I was like at 5 and 2 hours later, I was pushing the baby out. You know, I'm like, okay. I was trying not to let it get me down. So I just kept laboring.
We were like walking. You were doing squats. Yeah, you were walking on the bed.
Oh, yeah, the squats.
Hands and knees.
Like, what am I doing? Like, is he not in a good position? So we're doing all sorts of movement, you know, through the contractions and everything. And then, gosh, it had been 8 hours, I think. So at this point, it was probably like 10 p.m.?
Yeah. You had slept deep resting.
Yeah, and, deep resting.
You know, they had to keep coming in and fiddling with the monitors. That's the annoying thing. Like, they couldn't get the baby's heart rates and they were like messing with you, but it didn't seem to bother you all that much, except that you were like almost asleep and everybody was very nice and whatever, but it's just like those monitors are just annoying,
you know,
because they're like, not like all the cords and stuff, but you were moving around a lot. And at no point did you seem like you were not handling them well or anything. It was like, wow, you were just chugging along, like not even close to getting to the point where you were like, oh, this is like too much. But do you remember, I don't know if you remember this, but you didn't really, for a couple of hours, you almost didn't really get a break in between them. Like,
yeah,
you would, the cramp or like the tightening would stop, but you would still feel this like deep kind of ache and it just kind of like wouldn't really let up and it was getting unclear like what was and what wasn't one. And it was sort of, so you were like uncomfortable continuously, but we were having you like pee and you had eaten a little bit more and you were drinking water. You were doing great. We were having you like relax. You were doing amazing with your relaxation during your contractions, like relaxing your face and oming and moaning. And, you know, Mike was super supportive of everything and they were leaving you alone as much as they could, except for the dang monitors. They were like getting so stuck on the idea of like, you can't have more than 5 contractions in 10 minutes or something. And it was like, maybe
I was having so much blood. Like when I'd go to the bathroom, it was
just
like the whole pad was like covered in bloody show, like tons and tons. And I'm like, how is this not doing anything? And it was like I had a constant pain. Like, never between contractions was it like, oh, okay, like the pain is gone. And then it comes again. So that's why it was so hard for me to understand. It was just like having a really painful period constantly. And then sometimes my belly would be tight and like a little bit more pain. It was just really hard. That's why I was like, it was fun to watch the monitor because I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. Like, I feel that intensity in my body and like it's ramping up. That makes sense. It's like correlated. But When you came in, you covered it with a towel because you don't want
to know. Well, I was like, you need to stop staring at this monitor screen and just like get into the zone.
Yeah. And it was good. And I appreciate that. you're the best doula ever. And you always tell me what to do. And I love it. So, yeah, it was like probably 10 o'clock at night. I had been on Pitocin for about 8 hours. And then finally Kathy came in to check me again because the last two checks were just the nurse. And they had a student nurse and then the regular nurse that both checked me, and neither could ever really tell what was going on with my cervix. And my poor little lady parts were just like so, it was just so sad from all of the poking and prodding. But she came in and I don't know, I really thought it would be different what she found. And
I know
it was just so sad. She's like, well, you're like at a 4, but your cervix is swollen. So you're now like going backwards, like you're a 3 because it's so swollen that it's now like occluding that opening. And I was just like, what? Like, what do you mean my cervix is swollen? And at first I was like, maybe it was from all those cervical checks, but I guess not. I guess women get them all the time and it doesn't cause a swollen cervix. So she basically explained that something basically in the way the baby was positioned or how it was happening was like putting pressure on the cervix and causing it to swell. And
instead of dilate, that was the crazy thing. Instead of dilate, it was swelling. And it was just like, what do you mean? And she had done this again, not as intense, but she really, really felt all around his head and he was moving so much. Like even during her exam, his body was like on the right. Then it was in the middle. Then it was on the left. Like he was all over the place. And so he still wasn't engaged, but also, and I really do trust her opinion about this because at least in that moment, maybe because she was touching his head, you know, through your body, it made damn sure to make sure this baby was not asynclitic. Cause I do really feel like that was what was happening with Avia. And we had not done the Gilligan's guide while we were in the hospital because it felt like he was in a really good spot. And that's the only thing that I think back on where I'm like, gosh, dang it, maybe he wasn't. But I honestly I didn't think that he needed to. And she did not think that he was asynclitic. She really felt like she could feel his bones, that he was chin tucked and everything was solid and good. It was just that your cervix was swelling instead of responding via dilating. And that was like a huge shock. I would just like had never even heard of that before. And then they outlined, you know, like really the only treatment for this. And typically when we see this, a swollen cervix is at like 8 or 9 centimeters when a woman is actually pushing or starting to feel pushy too early. And there's all that pressure and it responds by swelling. But I have literally never heard of, I know I'm not like a 35 year birth worker like she is, but I have never heard of a swollen cervix at 4 centimeters. It was just like, are you kidding? It was literally like,
And I don't think it was common for her either. I mean, she was like, I really thought this would have gone different. Like truly, like I'm not just giving you false hope. Like I really thought this would be different. So she walked me through that. Like, yeah, you can give like antihistamines. Sometimes it can help the cervix go down, but she's like, I've never seen it swelling this early. It's normally like around 8-9 centimeters and it could help, but not even necessarily. But this early, you know, she had like a real heart to heart conversation with me about what the trajectory would look like. And it felt just like Avia's birth where it's like, we have tried everything. We have done everything. Like they kept upping the Pitocin. That's why I said like, maybe I just don't respond to oxytocin things because they kept cranking up the Pitocin with Avia's birth. Like higher and higher and higher. I mean, they probably burned out my uterus, which is probably why my recovery with her was so hard. And with this, I mean, I was laboring at 16, you know, 4 dials under like the max or a VBAC person for a while. And it's like, you know, nothing was happening, or maybe it was, and it was contracting him into a bad position with the cervix, but it just I didn't see the path that would be safe for him or me to just keep, you know, beating this, you know, path to, it was just like, okay, she didn't think that a swollen cervix would resolve itself. So it was just like a gentle way of being like, you have a choice, but you don't really have a choice, you know, to have a C-section. And she still did make it feel like it was my choice, but it's like, I know it was because like, I didn't have a choice, you know, like this was my choice. And, the beautiful thing about her was that she does family-centered C-sections, which is a much more gentle way to do C-sections. They do delayed cord clamping and they let you do skin to skin, and it's very gentle and beautiful. And I was like, okay, well, I guess this is what's in the cards for me again. You know, I had already processed and cried so much about the loss of my, you know, ability to give birth as a woman vaginally. And I was like, okay, this is like, what if I'm going to have a C-section, at least I'm going to be with this person who I trust and it'll be great. So basically we decided to do it, to do the C-section, and she's the midwife. So she's had to have an OB-GYN assist her. And unfortunately he was new that day, so he didn't know about the family-centered C-sections. So she's like, it's okay, I'll help guide it and everything. And I was like, okay. So I had to get a spinal because I hadn't had an epidural, which anytime someone pokes a needle in your back, it's so nerve-wracking. So I remember when they brought me back to the OR, eventually, you know, they prepped me for the spinal, and it's just, you know, it's just so like, oh, like what's going to happen, you know? And I remember he poked my back, and oh, that hurts so bad when they poke your back. And then I did get like a jolt of like electric, you know, down my back. And so I jolted off the table. I don't know if that affected it or not, but they laid me back down and they're like waiting for the spinal to like take hold and do its job or whatever. And they're like touching me and I'm like, I still feel that, you know, I'm like, when am I supposed to not feel it? And they're like, really? Like, do you feel this? I'm like, yeah, I feel that. Like there were parts of my body that were numbish, but not completely numb. Cause I remember what it's like, you know, to have an epidural where you don't feel anything. And they just kept prepping and kept prepping and they were moving so fast. And I'm just like, I still feel that. And then the guy's like, okay, well, if you still feel this pinch test, we're going to have to put you under. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, what do you mean? And, you know, it was already so sad that I didn't have my home birth. I didn't have a vaginal birth. I'm going into a C-section. And here's this like idea that they might have to put me under general and I won't even be able to be a part of my baby being born. So I'm like waiting for this block to work and they do a pinch test. And I'm like, I feel that. Like, and the one guy's like, well, let's just start cutting. And if you can feel it in the deeper layer, it will stop. Yes.
No, he did not.
I was like, do not cut me if I can feel that. And so they're like, I think we're going to have to put you under. And I was just like, oh my God, you know? And like I said, I've been through these situations so many times. It's almost comical at this point. Like, I'm the person who's the biggest advocate for like minimal intervention. And I've had every single intervention to have children. Like it feels like, you know, I mean, I've had to go under twice to remove polyps, IVF, like Mike had to do testicular retrieval. It wasn't even like a normal IVF where you just ejaculate in a cup. I mean, we have been through so many interventions. And then with my birth and, you know, all the things, and I had a spinal, and now I'm going to have to be put under general again, which it makes me nervous. My IVF doctor's like, you don't wake up very well from general. I'm like, great. He just says it takes me a lot longer than it should. So that has always made me a little nervous. I'm like, okay, I think I'm just so sensitive, you know? Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, poking and prodding. And I'm like, I feel that. And so they're like, okay, we're going to put you under. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm like, there's oxygen on my face. And they're like, okay, you're going to feel medicine. And it's like, you don't even have time to process. It's just, it was so sad. I'm just like, all right, this is sucks. And I'll, you know, the next thing I know, I'm waking up and I have no pain management because the block didn't work. My C-section hurts so bad. Like with Avia, I was on an epidural, so I didn't feel it. I didn't feel it until 3 days later when I got off my IV pain meds. But I wake up full feeling the C-section and I'm on Pitocin because I guess I lost a bunch of blood. So they do that anyways, I think, for anyone, I guess. I don't know. But I'm on Pitocin, so my uterus is contracting. So I'm having like those 16, you know, like the most intense contractions that I had before the C-section with no pain management after, and they're pushing on my uterus, you know, to try to get my uterus to go down. And I was like, oh my God. And, you know, I had the realization that my baby came out and I didn't get to see him be born and I'm in so much pain. I'm like, this is the most pain that I think I've ever had because I just could feel like the whole incision and the Pitocin contracting. Of that incision. And then they're pushing on my uterus. Yeah.
I can't believe that they can do that. Like they can make the uterus contract while it has like sutures in it. I don't understand that. I mean, I'm not a surgeon.
Well, let me just tell you, it's really, really painful. And normally people have pain management. They rely on those blocks to, you know, numb you for the next 24 hours, and mine didn't work. So I like wake up and I'm crying. They like give me the baby, but it's like, I don't even remember holding him. I'm just like, this, I just, that was when I started like losing it again. I was like, I cannot believe this is happening, that this is like my birth, you know. It was just so sad. And I was just like, I need something. Like, I need pain support. Like, this is crazy. Like, I can't, you know. And then they just kept pushing on my uterus, and I would like cry because it hurts so bad. And Mike's like, can you give her anything? It was like so sad. And so they're like, well, we could give you some Tylenol. So they like gave me some Tylenol. It didn't do anything. And I was like, is there anything else? Like, and so they're like, we can give you fentanyl. And I was like, God, I really don't want fentanyl. Like, this is terrible. But I was in so much pain. And I was like, fine, just try it. And it literally did nothing for my pain. And it just made me feel like a psycho loopy person. I hated it. I was like, this is terrible. So now I'm like dizzy and like can't like think straight. And my like, I'm like swirling all over the place. And I feel just absolutely terrible. And the pain is still just as bad. So I was like, that sucks. I'm never doing that again. And it was just, I don't even remember. Oh, and then they're like, okay, well, we could give you an oxy. I mean, this is like an hour later. They're still pushing on my uterus. They're still like contracting. So I was like, fine, like, you know, whatever. So they gave me an oxy. I didn't want to, because you can pass it to the baby. But I was like, I feel like I'm dying. Like, I need something. So they gave that to me. And it did help with the pain, but I also felt so bad on it. They had finally transferred me back to the birth room, and I just felt so loopy and so out of it. And I was like, I hate this. And so I was like, I'm not going to take another one of those. I'm like, whatever. They were giving me an NSAID and like an IV or a shot. It was like a ibuprofen type thing. So after that one oxy, I was just like, just, I can handle it. Like, give me, I don't want to feel like this, you know, with my new baby. I don't want to transfer it to him. So I didn't have any like narcotics after that. I was just taking the NSAIDs and Tylenol. But yeah, it was really gnarly. And then the worst part was that with the family-centered C-section, Mike was going to be able to be in the room, and we were going to be able to do skin to skin, and it was going to be this beautiful thing. And when they decided to put me under, all of a sudden a nurse comes out to Mike in the hall, and they're like, we have to put your wife under. You need to leave. You can't be here. You can't be in the hall. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm not leaving my wife or my baby. And this nurse, bless her heart, Mike's like, so what's going to happen to the baby? And she's like, well, we're going to take the baby and strap her to your wife while she's unconscious for 2 hours, and you can't be there. And you can come in after she's been out of the recovery room. And he was just like, no. I mean, he literally was like livid. He is like, you are not taking my baby and strapping her to my unconscious wife's body. He was freaking out. He's like, let me talk to somebody else, you know? And so they got the other nurse, and I don't know what the first nurse was thinking, but the nurse was like, no, you can take the baby and do skin to skin while your wife, you know, is sutured up and all of that. But, you know, Mike's whole life, this is the second time he's had his whole life flash before his eyes, you know, because he really was so scared with Avia's birth that we were both going to die. And here we are. It was supposed to be this gentle C-section, turns into this, like, something's wrong. We have to put your wife under. Like, you can't be here. You have to leave. Like, he was freaking out. Poor guy. He's been through so much of, like, stress. So he was able to take the baby, but it's like, we didn't get to video his birth. I don't, you know, I didn't get to see him be born. And then, you know, you wake up and you've just had a major abdominal surgery, and it sucks, and it's so painful, and it hurts, and you're trying to breastfeed and nurse, and, you know, you can't move, you can't use your abs. Like, it's definitely not my choice. I don't know why people choose a C-section. But yeah, so that was crazy. And other than that, you know, he was healthy. The midwife said that when they pulled him out, it was really hard to get him out of my body. They bruised him a little bit pulling him out. They said his head was cockeyed when they pulled him out. I don't know if it was just in that moment or what was going on, but he made it, and he was, you know, perfect in every way. I bled like 800 mils. So they were really worried about that. They're like, if you keep bleeding, you know, blah, blah, whatever, like it could be considered a hemorrhage. And so they kept checking my bleeding, but it did start to slow down. Except a couple hours after, the nurse came in and she's like, oh, we only gave you one bag of Pitocin for post-bleeding, and we ordered two. So I'm going to start you on the second bag. And I'm like, but my bleeding is slowed down. And she's like, well, I don't know. We ordered two. And I'm like, that makes no sense. And you are not going to put that back in my body and start my uterus contracting again, because that was so gnarly and painful. They were already pushing on my abdomen. You know, they would come in every like 30 minutes. And I'm just like, no, like go ask the doctor, because that doesn't make any sense. Like just because it was ordered, it doesn't make sense physiologically if I don't need it. I'm just like, these are the moments when it's like, if people don't know how to advocate for themselves. And she came back, she's like, you're right. Like, you don't need it. And I'm just like, I can't believe you were about to give me another full bag of Pitocin. It would have been like 4 more hours of me contracting.
For literally no reason.
For no reason, which my uterus was still contracting from my own contractions, or like, you know, remnants of the Pitocin. And it was like the worst part when it would contract, because I could feel my C-section and it was just like pulling on it. It was just terrible.
Did you have that with AV, or no, you didn't, you couldn't feel it?
I had an epidural.
Okay. I don't understand why they didn't expect you to be able, you like, if they knew that the spinal block didn't make you numb, why did they not like preemptively give you something really strong for your pain management for when you woke up? Like that is, there is something not right there. That is nuts. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know.
And I had left because they had said that you, after the cesarean, I wasn't going to be able to come in, which was fine. I mean, I did want to film as much as possible. Obviously, it would have changed anyways, given the way that it went. But I had left because they said that you were going to be in like a recovery room for 2 hours. And this is like at 1 a.m. So I was like, okay, I'll go. But I, you know, I feel bad, like badly that I could have potentially been more support for Mike and whatever. And just like advocating for some pain management stuff. Cause it's just like, what do you mean? Like, how do you not, if she could feel it, don't, what do you think is going to happen afterwards? Cause anesthesia doesn't take away the pain. Anesthesia just makes you unconscious.
I know.
I mean, there's a little bit of that, but I don't know. That whole thing was odd. I mean, you, all things considered, dealt with that so well to just only be on that like ibuprofen-esque type, you know, mixed with the Tylenol cocktail after basically the two doses of the narcotics, and then that was it. And then you were just like managing it with that, which I know you were still, when I saw you the next day at like, I don't know, 10, 11 a.m. or something like that. So it had been like 9 hours. You were still in like a lot of pain at all times, but you were able to, I don't know, you're just so strong. Your pain tolerance is extremely high.
So I guess, I don't know. It's like, it's so hard because pain is so subjective. It's so hard to know, but it is interesting with these measurements, like, you know, like the Pitocin is 20, like that's a standardized thing across the board. And like most women, you know, get epidurals at that point. So it's like, I don't know, maybe I do have a high pain tolerance, or maybe I don't feel things. I don't know, but I do, like I'm very sensitive to certain things, but yeah, I don't know. It just, it was crazy. But despite all of that, the weirdest thing, I feel like there's something wrong with my body, because I have like paradoxical reactions to things. Like when I should be sensitive to stuff, like going through all of that, having all of the birth end up that way, being in pain and stuff, you'd think I'd be like depressed. But then I was like happy because I had my baby. And even with the hormone drop, you know, of postpartum, it's like I feel like I should be more depressed, but I'm not. I feel so much, like mood-wise, I'm so happy postpartum, probably because I'm so depressed during my pregnancies. I don't know. I just, a lot of women feel so good pregnant and I feel absolutely terrible. I hate it. And a lot of women feel really bad postpartum and I feel great, even despite being in pain and, you know, having all the things. It's so strange.
And not sleeping and like all of that stuff.
Not sleeping, being completely sleep deprived. Maybe it's the oxytocin from breastfeeding. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you thrive in postpartum. It's so great. It's so, you deserve nothing less than to have like the most banging amazing postpartums given everything that you've gone through. And it does make me really happy, because I was getting, there was a point there right before the C-section where I was like, you know, I don't know if you remember, because there was so much going on, but you were very worried. You were like, what if I don't feel like I, so what, you were like kind of asking, you were like, so I don't get any of the like oxytocin vibes of the birth. Like I don't get any of that. And I was just like, I don't know for sure. I mean, I think you will, when you see him, it will be different. You'll bond, but, and you know, people get epidurals, they get Pitocin, they have these crazy, and you know, there's some evidence that does show that there could be an interruption of bonding in that situation. And that was one thing that Kathy also was trying to weigh in the balance of this, was, which is something that I've learned over time. I used to be such a staunch, like, push for the birth to be this thing, you know, but there's also mothering at the other end of this.
Yeah.
You have to mother this baby. And if you're so exhausted from just this attempt, because really what we were looking at was multiple rounds of Benadryl to try to get your cervix to unswell, with an epidural to try to relax the whole pelvic everything and just see. I mean, it could have been another 24 hours though before potentially he was born. And it was just like, do we want to do that? Like, are we looking into, are we that like committed to this whole situation where maybe it doesn't go well and then you're in an emergency cesarean, which was the ultimate goal to avoid that. And then go ahead and tell people how much he weighs.
I know. Well, and just to piggyback off of that is by the time I went to the hospital, it's like the dream birth that I wanted is already gone. You know, it's not like I need to have all these medical interventions to just push him out of my vagina. It's like right. The whole idea of like having this beautiful, trusting, surrender, like birth where, you know, I get to feel all the things. It's like that was already gone. So it's like at that point, it's not like I just need to have him out of my vagina to have him out of my vagina. And the medical interventions were already so extreme. It's like, yeah, you're always weighing the pros and cons of what is going to be more damaging to him. And I made that same decision with Avia, where it's like, I just felt intuitively that pushing to have a vaginal birth was going to be more traumatic than having a C-section at this point. It's like IVF. There's so many people that get pushed into IVF unnecessarily. They don't need it, but they get pushed into it. And they could be avoiding it if they knew other things. C-sections are the same. There's a lot of unnecessary C-sections, but sometimes there are necessary C-sections. Sometimes IVF is necessary. Sometimes C-sections are necessary. And I truly believe in my heart that I obviously know our IVF was necessary. We literally can't conceive without it. And I do think I am one of those people who the C-section is necessary. For whatever reason, I don't know. And so I'm at peace with that. You know, it's not like I'm like, oh, I cannot have this because whatever. But it took a lot of processing, you know. I've had a lot of time to process. But yeah, he was 9 pounds, 13 ounces. So he was almost 10 pounds. And I mean, 20. Kathy came in after, you know, and she could have just been saying this, but she's like, I really don't think he was ever going to come vaginally. And she's like, and I think everyone should give birth at home. I think everyone should, you know, have these vaginal births. And she's like, there are some babies that are just not meant to come into the world that way for whatever reason, whatever, we don't know. And she's like, I think you were one of those, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know why I have huge, humongous babies and they go to term and they never come out. And
well, and he was 23 inches long too, which is a big, big old boy. But, and then one thing that I've learned recently that I think is another area where, like, you know, just the more you learn and the more experience and the time that goes by, it's like, there, you know, I used to be very staunchly like, there's no situation, no such thing where a woman would grow a baby that can't come out of her pelvis. Because that doesn't make sense. Or maybe not no such thing, but so, so, so much rarer than we are told. And I actually do think that that is true, that it's so much rarer than we are told. Totally. And the evidence-based birth article, which I can also link in the show notes, about the idea of big babies shows that too. Big babies, I'm writing that down. But I talked with this other midwife one time about big, you know, I have a friend that gave birth in the summer. She's teeny tiny like you. She's shorter than you though. And had this 10-pound baby also, like you, and via C-section. She never dilated past 1 centimeter. And I was just like, given all of these interventions, and I was just trying to process and understand that. And I wanted to talk to somebody who is experienced in this birth world. And we were like really unpacking it. And she was like, that baby maybe never would have come out. And maybe both people would have passed away, you know? And that, and I was like, no, come on. Like, that can't be. That's not the way, like, how would we have evolved this way and adapted this way? And she was like, it's different now. She's like, it's a different situation because of global travel and America being a melting pot. It is not like you've stayed in your little village and mated with the people who are anatomically built like you for thousands of years the way that it was. She's like, now we have Asian pelvises marrying German pelvises or Russian pelvises marrying, so I don't know, Ethiopian pelvis, whatever.
Like Finnish pelvises.
Exactly.
I mean, Mike's family is huge.
Huge. Mike is huge. Mike's shoulders don't even
go. Smallest of his family.
Yes, and his shoulders barely go through a door frame.
Yeah, I know.
Like, and you are not like a teeny tiny little stick person, but you are like very on the petite end of things, yeah. You know?
And my dad isn't like a huge man, you know, like no. I don't have like huge. I mean, Mike is like huge Russian. Like his grandmother is like a big Russian woman. I mean, she is, you know, they have the genes on that side. So it is definitely possible. And it's crazy to think about. I mean, this is why my mom was so nervous about my birth with Avia, because she works with animals. And she's like, if you breed certain cows with a certain bull that throws big babies, the cows die. She's like, we see that all the time. I mean, we specifically buy bulls that have small birth weight babies to protect our cows. Because she's like, in nature, they die all the time if they're too big. And I'm just like, oh my God. But I mean, maybe it's possible.
The only reason, yeah, it's totally possible. And the only reason that I can reconcile that in my mind, being like, you know, an anthropologist, ecologist, biologist, whatever, is just that, like, yeah, because we are traveling all around the world, which is not something that has happened for millennia, right? And so we're not staying in our, okay, well, like a Chinese man marrying a Chinese woman and having a Chinese baby through mm-hmm. that kind of a shape of a smaller frame, or a big Russian man marrying big Russian woman with bigger hips and things, and then now it's okay. So it's interesting. I mean, I'm not trying to like breed fear in this. It's just something to contemplate and like a thought experiment. We'll never know at the end of the day. But I think what was so clear with this situation and with Avia too, potentially, I feel like positioning was a big factor into that, and pressure. Mm-hmm. And your midwife being like kind of overall unsupportive, which was a weird thing in the moment.
My initial midwife, yeah.
Yeah, your initial midwife, yes. This time around, I think the people involved in this whole process were like actual angels sent literally from heaven. Yeah. Everybody was so amazing and so sweet and so wonderful. Mm-hmm. Except maybe that OB that was going to try to cut you, even if you could feel. Yeah. But it's like up against, for me, as a third party perspective, it was like, and I know you felt this too, but it was just bananas how every mm-hmm. time we'd be like, okay, this is going to be the thing that gets it.
Yeah.
Okay, this is going to be the thing too. Because with homeopathy, I know that a lot of people are like, well, homeopathy is so gentle, like whatever. No, but you respond extremely well to homeopathy. You also start having an immediate kind of like response of contractions as soon as you took those first few doses. And I thought, holy shit, this is going to be it. She just mm-hmm. needs some homeopathy, and then boom. And then nope. And then, okay, fine, castor oil. All right, here we go. Like, of course she's going to respond to the castor oil. And then you work.
Statistically, it's like crazy how much it didn't work.
It just kept not happening. And it was like, at the end of the day, we need to listen to what's happening here. Like, this baby is very clearly communicating with us. And then when it was this like 4 centimeter sole and cervix thing, I was like, hands up in the air, like, okay. Yeah. Okay. Like, literally, he could not be communicating clearer with us.
Yeah.
Like, I've never even heard of that. you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and neither had she. And so it was just like, okay, you know, we're trying to push for this thing, and for a good reason, because it is important. It's what you wanted, and that's the most important thing. But it's just like, damn, we don't know why. And that is the cool thing. I thought that she balanced well, the midwife, because she'd had that experience. She'd had a vaginal birth with her first and a cesarean with the second. And she's like, I, you know, like, it really blew my world up, basically, like having to have that, because it was just so many lessons learned about mm-hmm. what is it that is being communicated to us in this realm. And modern humans, now that we do have this surgical advancement of technology, this is a part of our like realm now. Yeah. And thank God for it, because there are such situations where we really, really need it, you know? So anyway, it was just like, you handled everything with such grace. And I feel like you literally peeled away like 100 layers of the onion of acceptance and grieving and mourning. And like, you know, obviously I wish that it would have gone differently for you so that you could have had those experiences.
Yeah, me too. It's definitely, like I said, I think my infertility journey, I had the same experience with Avia, where I fought that experience so hard for so long, like 5 years, where I was like, no, we do not need intervention. If we can't have kids, we're not meant to have kids. Like, we should be able to do this naturally. Like, you know, like all of the things that were so gnarly for me to process, and finally getting to a place of acceptance. I just didn't think I'd have to do it again. It's like, yeah. I had to do it with Avia, and I was like, okay, I learned my lesson. I'm really proud of myself. I did it. And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me that it's back again. And it is sad that like I won't ever be able to have that experience. You know, now legally that's not an option for me. And that sucks. But I also won't ever be able to have the experience of waking up one day and being pregnant. you know, having sex and being pregnant. Like, that's never going to be an experience that I have in this lifetime. And that has been really hard to like accept and process, but I have accepted it. And I look at my children and they're so amazing and beautiful. And I love my husband despite all the obstacles that are thrown at us. And, you know, I still feel so blessed despite all of it. And so I know of some women who have the quote unquote birth on paper that they thought that they wanted, yet have internalized it as very traumatic or have a lot of struggle with it. And I don't, you know, I always use this motto. It's not alcohol that's bad. It's not, you know, cookies or sugar or, you know, any of the things, the C-section, the IVF, none of it is quote unquote good or bad. It's more like the intention behind it, how it's being used, what it's being used around and for. And so, you know, even for me, even though I've had to go through IVF and have had two C-sections, which in the crunchy world are seen as these like horrible things that we want to avoid, I don't identify them that way. And
good.
So I have a lot of peace. And so anyone who's listening to this who has had to go down similar paths, I don't know why my journey is like, go through all the hard things that no one wants to go through. But I think that even if you do, like, you don't have to like live with sadness or like, you know, like there is a way. I think maybe that's the message that I could give to people, because I genuinely truly have gotten there where I don't feel like my path to parenthood has like been this horrible thing. It has been so much for me to process, and I have thought those things in the moment. But looking back on my life and all of the things that have happened, you know, I still feel very happy and very at peace and very blessed. And so,
and I think that is just a testament to just to all of the work that you've done around this, because I think a lot of people could be in your exact same situation and feel really traumatized by the whole thing. And I'm sure, like you just mentioned, at some points it has felt that way, but you have done so much work around that and continue to do so much work around that. And like, that is the whole thing about trauma too, is that I think there's like one definition of trauma that's, it's having an experience where in the moment your nervous system can't adapt, or like you can't integrate the experience, and then it just stays stuck that way. Like, that's one of the definitions of trauma, which makes total sense, right? But if we can go back, the way we can heal trauma is that we go back and we discuss it, we talk about it, we unpack it, we like understand it. Maybe we do some subconscious stuff with EMDR or spiritual work or body work or whatever it is. We get to the stuckness part of it, and then we can flesh it out and like move it through and integrate it fully into our body and process. That's like, I know you say the word process a lot. It's like, that's what you mean. That's what we mean, I guess, in this episode too, specifically. And it's like, that is such a huge part of so much of the things that you have done to get to this point where it is not what you wanted. It was the nth degree of intervention. Like, it could not have had more intervention. And it's like, I'm laughing about it, because it's like, yeah, like you said, it's comical. It's just like, are you kidding? Are you kidding me?
I know.
Like, we have tried everything. And it's just like, there is this huge mystery around birth that we just won't know. And thank God we do have all the technology that we do, so that you have these beautiful babies in your life and in this experience. Yeah. So anyway, thank you so much for sharing your birth story with us.
And yeah.
You look wonderful. It's Araza.
Use our affiliate code.
I'll put
for people who don't know,
affiliate code in the links.
It's a joke because I came to the hospital with a fresh makeup because it was like the day, and I was like, oh, we're gonna be taking pictures, you know, I want to look pretty. I mean, I did not by the end of the day. Like, once I had the baby, I was like mascara running down my face and like crying. It was like terrible. I'm like, these are not good pictures. But yeah, it's a joke that
you look so beautiful when you arrived, though, and I was like, what are you wearing? Like, Raza.
Use my link.
Exactly. So it was just funny. Okay. Well, anyway, get back to your resting and eating. And okay, just a really quick, can you give us like a 5-minute rundown on how you're feeling postpartum?
Yeah. Well, we ended up leaving the hospital that same day,
which is kind of unusual.
Which is very unusual. I mean, they almost made us sign an AMA against medical advice. So I had him at 1:01 a.m. on Tuesday. So 41 and 1. Because they just took their, or 42 and 1, yeah. They just took their sweet time getting me into the C-section. So I'm like, okay. They're like, there's a woman who might be going into an emergency C-section. So we're just going to wait so that we have the doctors available. And so we're just like waiting and waiting and waiting. I'm like, oh my God, this baby must really want to be born on a Tuesday and not a Monday because like, what is going on? Like everything to delay him coming into the world is like happening. So he came in at 1 a.m. and I don't know. I, despite all of that and all the pain and everything through the night, I was doing pretty well, way better than with Avia. Because I remember we had to stay in the hospital like 3 days or something with her. And they're like, you can't go home until you're off your IV pain meds. And they had me on fentanyl and all sorts of crazy things with my epidural. And that sucked. And I remember when I wanted to go home with her, I woke up in the middle of, well, I was like, okay, just cut my IV meds. I'll go to oral because I really wanted to go home. And I woke up in the middle of the night feeling probably a similar thing that I felt when I woke up out of anesthesia. Where I was like, oh, this is what it feels like to actually feel my C-section. Like, this is really gnarly. Like, oh my God. I mean, it's just to be cut open and feel that is really intense. And so with them, this time around, I was on the NSAIDs, you know, by the early morning. And they're like, well, you have to get up and walk. So my spinal didn't work completely, but it numbed me enough where I couldn't get up and walk. You know, fully. It's like I didn't have every muscle unnumbed. So I had to wait for that to kind of wear off. And they're like, you need to be able to walk and you have to pee and like, you know, all these things that they make you do. Cause I just don't sleep well at the hospital and I don't heal well. They come in and interrupt you and do all the things. There's like a constant parade of people coming in trying to do things and sell you stuff and, you know, blah, 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 everything. So I was just like determined to be able to go home that night because I just didn't feel like it was going to be that beneficial to just stay one more night and leave in the morning. It's like, I'd rather be able to just go home and sleep in my bed and Mike be able to sleep in a separate room and get some sleep. So I was able to do that. I mean, my recovery this time has been better than with Avia for sure. I was able to get up eventually and walk and pee and I was on the oral pain meds. And so they kept, you know, telling us like, we really don't want you to leave. And I was like, I don't understand how me staying like 8 more hours through the night when no one is going to be here is going to be that different. I mean, he's like passing all of his tests with flying colors. I've done all the things. I'm like, please just let us go home.
There was no, yeah, just so that everybody knows too, there was no concern between you or baby. Like right. Your bleeding had stopped. They weren't worried about that. They didn't need to do a transfusion. There was no signs that anything was wrong. It was just basically like policy. And they were really, really, really stuck. This was a funny part. They were so stuck on him getting his newborn exams at exactly 24.
You have to get your newborn exam after 24 hours. I was like, well, my midwife is planning to come the next morning and get
to
it.
To do it. Yeah.
And they're like, well, but it can't be before 24 hours. I'm like, she's not coming at night. I was like, when are you guys going to come do it? You're not coming at 1 a.m. 24 hours after the birth. They're like, no, it would be like in the morning shift. I'm like, so the exact same time that my midwife is coming is when you are coming and you're keeping me in the hospital to just do a heel prick and a newborn exam when my midwife literally can do the same thing and I've already paid her for it. Like I now have to pay you and the hospital because we don't have traditional insurance. So I'm like, what? Like, what is the point? It was the pediatricians that were fighting so hard for us not to go because, and I'm just like, he's all of his bilirubin, everything is perfect. We're breastfeeding perfectly. He barely lost any of his birth weight. Like he was nursing like a champ. I'm like, there's really nothing that you can like justify holding us here. I had my birth, you know, my midwife was like coming the next morning. So
I think it was finally, just that they were like, it's unheard of for somebody with a C-section to leave so soon, but you just know that they bother you all night long. You don't get to sleep.
There's it's like, I'm going to heal better at home.
There's the funniest reel. If I could find it, I'll.
Yes, no, with the girl coming in like every 15 minutes. Yeah, I'm like,
she like opens the door, knock, knock, knock. And she's like, hey, mama. And then like drops the clipboard.
Yeah. How you doing? Coming to check your blood pressure. It's like 1 hour later. Hi. I'm here to check your blood pressure again. I'm just like, oh my God. Yeah, and that's what it's like.
There is benefit sometimes when there's something going on. I'm not trying to discount that. Obviously, things happen postpartum and totally. People need that support, but there was nothing that was happening that was indicating that for you, and you are knowledgeable and like aware and have a cuff at home and could be doing those things. And then you could just get actual real sleep that night. And it was anyway. So I'm just so glad that you were able to do it because that's
well, it was
how
your midwife's
going.
Idea. She's like, you know, you're a doctor, you know what to look for. She's like, you have great support. I think you could go home, you know, tomorrow night when the baby was born, like that night. So it was her idea. It's not like we were even going against that. I just think the rest of the hospital is like rolling their eyes. To be like, oh my God. So I was really grateful. They were great. Honestly, like the Nampa hospital was awesome. The nurses were all amazing. We had a really good experience, and that was healing for me too, because I have a lot of like medical trauma, mostly from like working with patients, honestly, where I'm just like, this is surely an anomaly. Like these things that happen to my patients, I'm like, this has to be an anomaly. This has to be a rare experience like that people have. And it's just, there's been so many that, you know, I'm just very wary sometimes around the conventional
medical. As you should be. And it's not to say, if there's any like LNDs or midwives or doctors are listening to this, you have to you have to be able to go, yeah, I can see that, right? Because it's like, and it's not to say that all home birth midwives are perfect either, because they can ruin things too. All medical professionals can ruin things. We're human. I'm sure that we've made mistakes too with our people. And it's not like we're in these like really high intensity situations of something like a birth. Like we're doing, you know, lifestyle management, medication, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, people have bad days. People are human. They make mistakes. They oversee things. They push whatever. And it's just like we can't just think to ourselves like, I'm going to go along with whatever is said to me, like that extra bag of Pitocin for literally no reason, just because it was ordered. Like that's a perfect example. Not to say that the nurse was wrong. It's just that she was probably just following orders. She's just like doing her thing. And it's like, no, wait a minute. Does that make sense? Like, let's think about it. Does that actually make sense? You know? So anyway, whatever. I mean, we all have to just kind of like take it in with what's happening before us and make the pivots in real time. And, you know, have the best prep possible, the best support system possible, so that when we're in the real life choice of making these decisions, it's like you can walk away feeling like, I really do feel like we made the right choices. And that I think is, you know, huge, and a huge lesson in both of these stories for you too. I mean, and for me, you know.
Yeah. It was great. But yeah, everything's good. Postpartum is good. Breastfeeding is good. My nipples are a little sore, but we're working on it. And I'm just, you know. Happy.
He's so cute.
Little chunk. His diapers don't hold his pee or his poop. So anytime he pees or poops, it just goes everywhere. I don't know why. But other than that, we're good and I'm happy. And that's the most important part. So he's healthy and we're both good.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing. And I love you so much. You're the best.
Yes. Thank you.
Do you have your heart set on starting a family and are eagerly preparing to begin trying within the year? Have you been actively trying to conceive for several months? Do you have a burning desire to optimize your chances of conception and avoid the distressing path of infertility? Or have you been navigating infertility for a while, yet you yearn for new solutions, a supportive environment, and an approach that addresses the root causes of infertility? Our current fertility system is broken. Many couples receive almost zero support on optimizing their health and improving their chances of conceiving before or while trying to have a baby. 1 in 7 couples end up trying for over a year and then are often shuttled into the medication or reproductive technologies route like IVF. Although there is a time and a place for these tools, so many couples would have different outcomes if they had the education, resources, and support I provide in my Fertility Formula program. This program is a step-by-step, doctor-designed, holistic fertility solution for the couple who wants to conceive optimally. It includes everything a couple needs to know with all of the resources I've created over many years seeing patients in practice. From mastering the cycle to boosting egg and sperm quality, balancing hormones, investigating female and male fertility, having access to order your own labs, both hormones and functional medicine labs, nourishing the body with eating and managing that whole aspect, fostering fertility energy, ditching toxins, reducing stress, rebalancing the gut and vaginal microbiomes, and detoxing prior to pregnancy, this program has it all. On top of that, it includes the bonus modules of breaking up with birth control, optimizing IVF if that ever becomes needed, and my pregnancy loss guide. This is the holistic information and step-by-step guidance you aren't getting from your regular doctor that will only improve your chances of conception and the health of your future baby, no matter where you are along your fertility journey, or no matter what support you might need, whether that's getting pregnant naturally or going through IUI or IVF. Visit www.womanhoodwellness.com/fertilityformula and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off the entire program. Again, that's www.womanhoodwellness.com/fertilityformula and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.